Okay, so continue. So these verses, you know, where the Buddha here is describing how, you know, the benefits of the Shramana life, is also in the first sutra, the Brahmajala Sutra. It's these qualities are described as a way in which worldly people praise the Tathagata. Okay? So he's describing not only how to behave, but how he behaves and what people see as valuable. Okay, so continuing on where we left off yesterday. So he is a refrainer from damaging seeds and crops. Okay, he eats once a day and not at night, refraining from eating at improper times. Okay, so in the improper times means after midday. When it says once a day, somehow, you know, some people eat once a day, but others have, you know, breakfast, and, you know, that's permitted. In the Mahayana tradition, in the Chinese tradition, because they're vegetarians, then they allow for a medicine meal in the evening, saying that to keep one up one's strength, because one's vegetarian, then it's acceptable to have food in the evening, but the food is like medicine. It nourishes your body. He avoids watching dancing, singing, music, and shows. Okay, so he's not glued to the internet, surfing the internet, not glued to the television set with a remote control in his hand, not humming along with the music in the car as he drives, not, you know, dancing when any music comes along, not attracted to the latest movies and TV shows so that he has something to talk with his colleagues and friends about. Okay, so the mind is completely interested in something else, not in dancing, singing, music, and entertainment shows. He abstains from using garlands, perfumes, cosmetics, ornaments, and adornments. So these are all things that we use to make ourselves look more beautiful. Okay, so we abandon them for several reasons. One is that so often we adorn ourselves because we don't feel like we're okay the way we are. You know, so adornments and perfumes and cosmetics all come from a sense of low self-esteem. I'm not good enough looking the way I am. I need beautiful clothes or barrettes in my hair or, you know, dye my hair this way, you know, a certain color or comb it that way or wear certain jewelry or whatever, but something to look better because how I am isn't good enough. Okay, so abandoning that whole trip, that whole psychological trip of not being good enough. Then also, I mean, when we adorn ourselves and use cosmetics and things like that, it's also a way to pretend like we're not aging. Yeah, let's dye our hair and look nice, and then we won't have to realize aging. It kind of blows my mind to see what happens. All these people that, you know, you all start out studying Dharma together in your 20s, and then in your 50s, all these people who've heard teaching eight worldly Dharmas year after year after year, when they're 50, they start dyeing their hair. You know, and they've heard teachings on old age, sickness, and death for 25 years, and now they're dyeing their hair or having facelifts or, you know, doing something if you're going bald to get more hair, you know, or getting a toupee or doing something to look younger, you know. So completely, you know, fearful of aging and death, even after all these years of hearing about it, you know, the mind doesn't feel comfortable with the process. So, you know, stopping using ornaments and jewelry and cosmetics, it really, we must face the process of aging and everything that entails. Of course, the Buddha also forbid carrying a mirror around, so that's very helpful. You don't have to look at yourself all the time. But also, another thing about singing, dancing, you know, going to entertainment or those kinds of things, it's always such a way to have people look at us, isn't it? Yeah? You know, look how good I dance, look how I sing, look at this, look at that. So it's drawing attention to us. Or if we're watching an entertainment show, it's a way of just spacing out, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's have something amusing to look at. Okay, so that person abandoned all that. He avoids using high or wide beds or seats, you know, so putting oneself in a prominent place, wanting a very expensive, luxurious, comfortable bed. He avoids accepting gold and silver, so having, actually gold and silver means money, but it also means gold and silver. You know, how like we like to have really nice silverware, beautiful gold things, or gold rings, or gold jewelry, or, you know, stuff like that, how we like to have money and you know, whatever money symbolizes to us, can symbolize freedom, it can symbolize success, it can symbolize power, it can symbolize love, whatever it is. So whatever money symbolizes to us, giving all of that up. Okay. He avoids accepting raw grain or raw flesh. And then these next things is because people at that time, well, I'll read it and then I'll explain. He does not accept women and young girls, male or female slaves, sheep and goats, cocks and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses and mares, fields and plots. Okay, so in the time of the Buddha, there were slaves, you know, and so the Buddha does not accept other people as, you know, his slaves or as indentured servants of any kind. He doesn't accept any animals to raise that are going to then be slaughtered for their meat. He doesn't accept fields and plots for agricultural purposes, although the Buddha did accept land for the use by the Sangha. For example, Jetavana's Park that Ananda Pindaka gave. Okay. But, you know, property for agricultural purposes to earn a living from there. He refrains from running errands. Okay. So running errands can mean several things. It could mean matchmaking, running errands between, you know, a couple, members of a couple to get them together. Running errands. Remember in a time when there's no internet and like today, your internet doesn't work, and telephone and things like that, then you relied on errand, you know, people who to run errands. And those people had a lot of power. They knew who was talking to who and what messages were being carried between who and what. Okay, and you can ingratiate yourself very well with a powerful person by carrying errands for, you know, for them. So, avoids this kind of ingratiating behavior. He refrains from buying and selling, so doing any kind of business. Yeah, and you can see as a monastic, wow, you know, if you start buying and selling, then your mind's just thinking about money and how much are the raw supplies and how much should we charge for this and, you know, all this. You're running a business and then it really takes your mind away from your practice. He refrains from cheating with false weights and measures. Yeah. So this would, you know, in modern terms, it would be avoids cheating by changing your accounting books. Yeah, by doing what an Enron official did or any other of these big CEOs. Refrains from bribery and corruption, you know, so giving somebody a present to get them to do something and, you know, all these different ways we have of giving a small gift in order to give it, get a big one in return. Restrains from deception and insincerity. So saying things that we don't really mean, that aren't true, so that we can get something out of other people. He refrains from wounding, killing, imprisoning, highway robbery, and taking food by force. Okay, so those are other the aspects of ethical restraint that are really, that a shramana adheres to. So you can think of, you know, modern equivalents of some of these things. Yeah, like writing bad checks so that your checks bounce. Yeah, not paying fees, borrowing things and not returning them. You know, bartering stuff, selling things. Just all sorts of stuff that we do. Okay. And now there's a whole section where the Buddha is talking about what other ascetics and Brahmins do. So ascetics means in his time the other wandering monastics at his time and the Brahmins, so that priestly elite. Okay? So some ascetics and Brahmins feeding on the food of the faithful, that means that they receive their food due to the kindness of others, you know, people who had faith in them, offered them food. So that's feeding on the food of the faithful. They are addicted to the destruction of such seeds as are propagated from roots, from stems, from joints, from cuttings, from seeds. Okay? So, you know, the ascetic, the shramana from the Buddha's flock refrains from such destruction. Okay, whereas some ascetics and Brahmins, feeding on the food of the faithful, remain addicted to the enjoyments of stored up goods such as food, drink, clothing, carriages, beds, perfumes, and meat. You know, the ascetic Gotama refrains from such enjoyments. And it's talking about the Buddha and his disciples refrain from this. So part of the Vinaya vows actually is not to store up food, you know, on a personal basis. Part of that, I think, was because if you kept food overnight, it could go bad, because there weren't refrigerators at that time. And also, they didn't want people kind of hoarding food out of this feeling of fear. So, you know, everything, all the food that anybody had to be either consumed or given away by midday each day. When you started having monasteries, then of course monasteries have storehouses, and the storehouses are filled with food. But there it's something that's possessed by the community, it's not possessed by the individual. So somehow not, you know, the way I think of this right now is like, okay, as an abbey, we have stores of food, but if we have more than we can possibly consume, or if we have stuff that's definitely going to go off, then we should, of course, give it away. Yeah? And so somehow hoarding food that you're not going to use out of fear or out of miserliness, you know, that's what I would think of as a modern adaptation of that. Okay, whereas some ascetics and Brahmins feeding on the food of the faithful remain addicted to attending such shows as dancing, singing, music, displays, recitations, hand music, cymbals and drums, fairy shows, acrobatic and conjuring tricks. combative elephants, buffaloes, bulls, goats, rams, cocks, and quail, fighting with staves, boxing, wrestling, sham fights, parades, maneuvers, and military reviews. The ascetic Gotama refrains from attending such displays. Okay, so if you can imagine, here's somebody who's, you know, living on the food of the faithful, so not working for a living. Other people offer them food because they have faith in their spiritual practice, but instead of doing spiritual practice and doing something that benefits others or keeping their precepts, you know, they're off watching television, going window shopping, watching football games, watching soccer and basketball games, going to the horse races, going to, you know, parades, and watching military reviews, and
the Blue Angels,
you know, to do their whole thing, and you know, so all these kinds of things. If you can think of that, you know, here's somebody who's eating because of somebody else offering because they have faith, and then that person doesn't practice, but they're off just, you know, in some kind of entertainment, lost in outer space somewhere. Okay. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to games and idle pursuits, as 8 or 10 row chess in the air, which means you're doing chess but without a board. Chess in the air is where you play chess but without a board, you're just playing it in your mind. Hopscotch, spillikins, dice, hitting sticks, hand pictures, ball games, blowing through toy pipes, you know, like the things on your birthday. Playing with toy plows, turning somersaults, playing with toy windmills, measures, carriages, and bows, guessing letters, like by writing in the air or writing on someone's back, guessing thoughts, mimicking deformities. The ascetic Gotama refrains from such idle pursuits. Okay, so all sorts, so basically playing games, you know, whereas some ascetics and Brahmins, you know, here they are, people are feeding them, you know, so they can do their practice, but then they're, you know, playing football and playing golf and, you know, playing chess and playing solitaire on the computer and, you know, playing, what do you call it, you know, all the different games, Nintendo?
Video games.
Yeah, so I'm doing all sorts of video games. You know, it's really unseemly, isn't it, when you think of, you know, somebody offering food because they really respect and have faith in you, and then you just kind of, you go off and you're acting completely, you know, like that. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to high and wide beds and long chairs, couches adorned with animal figures, fleecy or variegated coverlets with hair on both sides or one side, silk coverlets embroidered with gems or without, elephant, horse, or chariot rugs, choice spreads of antelope hide, couches with awnings, or with red cushions at both ends. The ascetic Gotama refrains from such high and wide beds. Okay, so again, you know, accepting food, you know, like this, but then you're addicted to just the most cushy, comfy environment ever. Yeah? And, you know, you want, it doesn't say it here, but, you know, a really beautiful teacup and really beautiful plates and silver that Nancy polished especially, and, you know, very comfortable chair, and, you know, room with, you know, authentic wood floors and authentic wood paneling, and, you know, quite the luxury home, okay, It just isn't suitable for an ascetic, a religious person. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to such forms of self-adornment and embellishment as rubbing the body with perfumes, massaging, bathing in scented water, shampooing, using mirrors, ointments, garlands, scents, unguents, cosmetics, bracelets, headbands, fancy sticks, bottles, swords, sunshades, decorated sandals, turbans, gems, yak-veiled fans, long-fringed white robes. The ascetic Gotama refrains from such self-adornment. Okay, so again, here you are. You're supposed to be a spiritual practitioner, but you're standing in front of the mirror every morning, looking at your zits, trying to make them go away, you know, putting cream on your face and, you know, cosmetics and working with your hair and, you know, always kind of every week going to get a massage and then soaking in the bathtub and a bubble bath every night, taking showers that are half an hour long and, you know, just all that kind of stuff. So, actually, this whole thing about massage, Venerable Buyan was asking about it, asking if some of the Christians, you know, had massage, or if they went swimming, and the Christian nuns. And so we were saying that, you know, if they went swimming, it was probably in a pool just with other people of their same gender, and it was for purposes of exercise, not for play. So going in, swimming a few laps to get exercise, coming out, basta finito, not wearing bikinis, not going to the beach, just in a private pool that, you know, that was only for those particular nuns, or in the case of a monastery, for monks. And then the same thing with massage, you know, if it's for health purposes, then, you know, it's okay. But if it's just to feel good and you want to relax and lie down, if your body rubbed with perfumes, it feels so good, you know, and soak in the bathtub for, you know, however long and, you know, all that kind of stuff, then that's not really suitable. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to such an unedifying conversation as about kings, i.e. politicians, okay, leaders, robbers, i.e. either CEOs or or other such robbers, ministers, this means, you know, the Donald Rumsfeld type, armies, yeah, dangers, wars, yeah, how much time people spend just talking about war, oh, this one conquered this one, and what's happening here, did you see the latest military moves, and these people really have the science of fighting really done well, and look at those armaments, and, you know, I mean, people sometimes can talk about all these just kind of weapons and armaments. You know, I don't even know what they are. And, you know, they're talking about this kind of missile that can go in here and go that and that kind of rocket. And, you know, so talking about all those kinds of things, talking about food and drink. Are you ever aware how much time people spend talking about food? It's unbelievable, you know. I mean, people go out to eat at a restaurant and they'll spend a half an hour looking at the menu, talking about the different items on the menu, you know. And does this, do you think they would make it with this ingredient instead of that? And I wonder if I have to have potatoes with it, or if they can substitute rice. How about this? Or maybe I feel like eating that. And people, even you don't go out to eat, people can spend so much time talking about food. Yeah, unbelievable. And just listen sometime. Yeah. You know, I ate at this place and this is what they had, or, you know, what do you like to eat with this, and what's your favorite this and that. And okay, so food and drink, clothes. How much time people spend about clothes. you know, where did you get that? And I really like it, and it looks so good on you, and that shade is so gorgeous. And, you know, I've had people kind of, this has happened more than once, walking through a park, and people will come up and say to me, I really like your outfit. Okay, I'm a nun, but, yeah. Have you ever had that? People compliment you on your, I've had it more than once. People will say, oh, those colors are really beautiful. Or I really like your outfit. You know? That looks really good on you. You know? Okay, but people, you know, worldly people spend a lot of time talking about clothes, don't they? And where did you get that? And, you know, does this color shirt and goes with these color pants? And, you know, look at these new shoes from Nike and the ones that kind of glitter on the bottom and, you know, that have the different stripes on them. And, oh, you know, people talk so much about clothes. Talk about beds. Oh, there's this bed and that bed and a hard bed and a soft bed and, you know, what kind of blankets and how comfortable the bed is and where can we go get a new bed and, you know, your bedroom furniture and making your bedroom so comfortable and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Garlands, perfumes, relatives, you know, talking about our family. Oh, did you hear what my sister did? Oh, did you hear what my brother did? What about your parents? And what about your cousins? And what about your cousins 15 times removed? And can you believe what this family member did? And how's this one and that one? So talking about relatives, carriages. In other words, cars. Oh, so-and-so got a Volvo, so-and-so got a Beamer, so-and-so got a this kind of car and that kind of car. I really like this new feature. And did you see those kind of cars? Did you see that? I was riding in a car when I was in Missouri that it was one of these hybrid cars. And on the, you know, on the, what do you call it, the dashboard, it had a little screen that reflected what was behind you. So you didn't have to look in the mirror, you just look in the screen, and it wasn't a mirror, it was like a movie camera, you know, that showed you everything as you were backing up. Yeah. And so talking about, look at these fancy features, and then, you know, some cars, how they have the ones where you can tell them where you want to go, and then the car tells you and it talks to you, you know, turn right in 300 feet. You idiot, you went past that light. You turn left, not right. You know? No. Actually, they're much more polite than the person who's sitting in the passenger seat. The person in the passenger seat said, you idiot. The machine just says, turn around and go back. You know, okay, so talking about cars and all the latest features that the different cars have. Talking about villages, towns, and cities. Okay, so what goes on in this place and what goes on in that place and how they're building up this one and where they're putting an industrial park in that one. Countries, women or men, you know. So did you see that good-looking person over there? And I wonder who so-and-so's dating, and I wonder if they'd like to go out with me, and blah, blah. Heroes, okay, so whether it's a sports hero, a movie star hero, you know, a military hero. Street and well gossip, in other words, coffee machine gossip. People talk about when they stand around the coffee machine at work. Talk of the departed. You know, so gossiping about people who have died, desultory chat, speculations about land and sea, so speculation, philosophical speculations about materialistic kind of concerns, talk about being and non-being, so all these kind of irrelevant philosophical blah blah kind of things like, do you think that out of the one universal consciousness, you know, all sentient beings appear at one time or many times. And the one universal consciousness, is it made of brilliant light or, you know, kind of all this kind of stuff. Okay. Okay, talk about being a non-being. The ascetic Gautama refrains from such conversation. Okay? So a monastic really is quite aware of what they talk about. Yeah? And what the subjects of the talk are, because it's filling their own mind with thoughts about all sorts of stuff, which when you sit down to meditate, you're reviewing all of that stuff again in your mind, again and again, as Venerable Choki so aptly described about her retreat. You know, but when we talk to people about different things, we sit down to meditate, the conversation's going on in our mind again, we're reviewing it, we're thinking about, oh, you know, I forgot to tell them about what I read in the newspaper here. I forgot to tell them about, you know, what so-and-so is doing. And you're planning your future conversations. And it's just, and then other people, you know, when we talk about the same kind of talk that lay people talk about, just in that same kind of flip, frivolous way, going blah, 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 then, you know, people don't see anything to respect in monastics. So it doesn't mean being uptight in your conversation, yeah, but it means kind of being aware of what we talk about and why we're talking about it. Okay, whereas ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to disputation such as, you don't understand this doctrine and discipline, I do. And how could you understand this doctrine and discipline? Your way is all wrong. Mine is right. I am consistent. You aren't. You said last what you should have said first, and you said first what you should have said last. What you took so long to think up has been refuted. Your argument has been overthrown. You're defeated. Go on, save your doctrine. Just get out of that if you can. The ascetic Gautama refrains from such disputations. Okay? So all this kind of, you know, debating for debating's sake, to win an argument, to put somebody else down, you know, it's just a form of idle talk, you know. There's no real sense and purpose, even though it seems like there is. So it could be about philosophical topics, it could be about religious topics, it could be about politics, but we just like to win a conversation and you know, trump somebody else and be seen as the wise one and put somebody else down. Okay, so all that kind of way of talking. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins remain addicted to such things as running errands and messages, such as for kings, ministers, nobles, Brahmins, householders, and young men who say, go here, go there, take this there, bring that from there, the ascetic Gautama refrains from such errand running. Okay, so being a busybody, basically.